Welcome to Libre Lounge, a podcast about free software, free culture, and all the other interesting aspects of user freedom, with Christopher Lemmer-Weber and Serge Roklowski.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Serge.
So I know for a while you've been wanting to talk to me about this object capabilities thing and school me in all of that stuff that I don't really understand. And you brought a guest with you. So why don't we talk about that?
Right. So I feel like this historical problem where object capabilities are a solution for a lot of the problems that we have on computers, but on the other hand, it's not very well explained or well understood by the general public, and getting into the literature is really hard, which is why I'm really, really excited to have in our guest, with our guest Kate Sills, who's from Agoric. She's an engineer at Agoric. So Kate, welcome to Libre Lounge. We're really excited to have you here.
Hi guys. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hi Kate. It's good to meet you. So I've heard from Chris about object capabilities, and I have a really general understanding about what they are and how they work. So maybe I'd love to hear your perspective on this whole topic.
Sure. So I think the way that people usually start is that, it's kind of silly, but there's a program on your computer that's really dangerous. It can drain your bank account. It can access all your files. It can send your files over the network. It can do a lot of really scary things. And this program on your computer is Solitaire. So I think the motivator for object capabilities is just that our current programs are just out of control. And we've seen this recently with the event stream incident, where I won't go into the details now, but we saw that just by including a module in one of our programs, they were able to get access to Bitcoin private keys. So right now, our programs, the programs that we're running, are able to do all sorts of things that we don't want them to do. And so we need a solution to that. And I think that's kind of the motivation for object capabilities. And tied into this is the concept of the principle of least authority. So in the event stream incident, this malicious module, it had access to the file system and it had access to the network, and it didn't actually need either of those things. So the principle of least authority would say, if something doesn't need access, don't give it access. So if Solitaire doesn't need access to the network, just don't give it access. And then that way, you know, no matter what, even if it's written maliciously, it can't drain your bank account. So I think object capabilities are very directly tied to the principle of least authority, and they're pretty much the best way to try to enforce that.
That makes sense. I mean, we talked about the event stream incident on, I think, one of our early episodes, and we'll link to that. And what we discussed was that when a program runs in our traditional systems, whether that be our Unix-based systems or even Windows, that programs run as a user. So we kind of have this idea of permissions, and a program has all, a program inherits all the permissions of the user who runs it. And there's some, of course, exceptions to that. But basically, anything that I can do, a program that's running on my behalf can do. And that's a problem when there's all these programs out there, and we don't really have the ability to audit them because, you know, there's millions and maybe even billions of lines of source code now, and there's no way that anyone can audit every single line of source code on a modern day computer. So it makes sense that we need some kind of approach that that addresses that. And it sounds like, you know, from what Chris has said and from what you're saying, that object capabilities is a method to do that.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and I think that there's also this thing where our gut feeling is to approach things in a kind of an identity-centric way, because that's the way that most of us are used to dealing with things in the real world. Like, I have the idea of, you know, Serge and Kate are two people I know, and I might trust them, you know, to do certain types of things. So I have this feeling, like, of course, you know, I think about, you know, Serge as a person, and Kate as a person. And it's the default assumption I might have is that I want to split up my computer programs to have that same kind of mapping. But it feels like it seems like this identity centric approaches kind of fall down when we try to put them in practice. So I guess let's get into what the alternative is.
Yeah. So what we're really talking about, I think, is access control, right? And we're familiar with the type of access control where it's like, you know, are you on the guest list to come into this party? Or, you know, are you the manager of this business and therefore you're able to go into the safe or something like that? But when it comes to access control in computers, we're talking about instead of it being on a human-to-human level, it's a process-to-process or computer-to-computer level. And I think that's kind of where our intuitions fall apart. But object capabilities give us something that I think works on both levels. So one example that people use often is the valet example. So you can imagine that you're checking into a hotel and you give the valet the key to your car and, you know, you continue checking in, they take the car, everything works as usual. And then later that night, you want to go use the car to go to dinner. That valet, the original one that you handed the key to, has gone off duty. But since he's just handed the key to the next valet that came on duty, there's no problem when you're able to take your car. So in that case, the key is kind of an object capability. So the alternative to object capability is known as the access control list, and there are other alternatives as well. But the access control list is more of an identity-based access control. And so in that example, if it was an access control list, it might be that you check into the hotel, but this time you would actually write the name of the valet down onto your car's list of who's allowed to access the car. But then when the time comes to go to dinner and the old valet went off duty, the new valet isn't actually on the list of people who have access to your car. So then, you can't actually get your car back. So,
right.
So what happens in this instance a lot is that people just hand off their permissions because they're like, oh, it's too hard to actually keep track of who's allowed to do what. You can just pretend to be me. So, you know, we've seen this where it's like people will just hand off their entire permissions to like a secretary or something like that to handle things for them, or an intern. But you know, this has a lot of problems. So like in this example, like maybe you just hand your driver's license over to the valet when you get out of the car, and then they're able to hand it over to any new valets that come on duty. So that part works. They can also take it to your bank and drain your account. So the access control lists, they have a lot of problems that I think object capabilities solve. And object capabilities are kind of like a key approach rather than, are you on this list of approved people?
Right. So I think that that's really interesting because these days we're finally entering an era where a car might scan your face and actually identify you. But historically, a car hasn't cared who you are about what your ability to turn it on. We have this complete other metaphor that's more kind of possession based, which is you just happen to have this thing and you turn, you know, you put it in the slot and turn the key and the car starts up and it doesn't really care who you are in that type of case. So I guess that what's nice about that metaphor is that, you know, we do have some things in the real world that actually do reflect our ability to, you know, whether or not we can access things. And it also seems interesting that, you know, you talked about handing things off as in terms of the valet, so I guess the object capability definition of that is delegation, right? If you're the car owner and I'm the valet and you handed that to me, we'd call that delegation. And what else can we do? Is there's another term that's coming to mind that's called attenuation. How else might we affect this valet key?
Yeah, so I think there are actually cars that work like this that have a special valet key that's limited in what it can do. So I don't know exactly how it works, but it might be something like, maybe it can only go within 10 miles or something like that. Or maybe it can only go up to, 60 miles per hour, or, you know, whatever it is that you would, that would stop someone from, you know, having a joyride. So attenuation is basically taking whatever you can do with it and limiting it somehow, and then handing that off. Right. So another example might be like, let's say you could hand someone access, or hand a program access to your entire file system, if you want them to just to write to a single file, or you can give them access to only that single file and maybe only the ability to append to it. And so you can kind of get smaller and smaller authorities that you can pass off. And this is very, very powerful. And it helps with the principle of least authority, because if they only need to append, definitely don't give them access to your whole computer's file system.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's definitely very different from the way that we traditionally think about, at least on just on one computer system, the way we think about the permission model, right? Which is that, you know, you have access to all of the APIs that are provided to you if you have, quote unquote, permission to a resource, which is usually a file, at least in the Unix system. But this makes a lot of sense. Your car valet metaphor makes a lot of sense, and I guess the API metaphor also makes sense if you're handling over, let's say, a file descriptor with a particular ability or not ability. So maybe you can read, or maybe you can, as you say, append and not necessarily read. But I'd like to hear more, I guess, computery examples.
Sure. So one example that people might be familiar with is the Google Doc links. So when you say share and you hand off a link and you choose, you know, whether you want to view or edit or whatever it is that you actually want to hand off to someone else, that's actually a form of an object capability. And the important thing is that someone hopefully shouldn't be able to generate it just by guessing.
So to make sure I understand, I guess the link is the, like, the reference. So if you, like, the link is the key. So the link that you're being, you know, that kind of randomly generated link is the reference to the object, and the object being that Google Doc. And then if the permission that was set when it was created, or the capability in this language was, okay, this person can read but can't edit, or can edit, that's different from, so they only have authority to do that one, to work on that one document, rather than, oh, if I'm giving you this, I'm also giving you access to my email and to all my other docs and my calendar and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. And in a full object capability system, you might even be able to do more things, like hand off a, you know, you can view it only once authority, or, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can imagine where it's like, you can only edit for this amount of time, or, you know, because we're going to be publishing later or something like that. So the cool thing is that there's a lot of, if you get creative, there's a lot of things that you can do with it.
Yeah. So what I also like about the link aspect is, well, so listeners who have been listening to Libre Lounge for a while know that, you know, a lot of what I do has to do with communication protocols. And so if we think about, you know, well, that link is an address that we've got, you know, one of the other addresses that comes up in my work is, you know, in ActivityPub, you have a link to an actor, and that actor is some account by which, you know, you can send messages, right? And this is also true in email, right? Email has, you know, bob@example.org or something like that. And we think of that as kind of, you know, this object in which we, this address in which we can reference Bob. But, you know, what if, you know, let's say this perception of having, you've got a address is kind of a very identity-centric type approach. And what's kind of cool is if you start thinking about, well, you know, what's that similar idea to the Google Doc link, you know, where it generates this, you know, kind of random-ish looking identifier that you can't just brute force and guess. Could we apply that thing to to other kinds of like a messaging context, like a social networking context? And the way that we can maybe do that is, instead of you having one inbox that you can send things to, maybe instead I could have multiple inboxes. So for example, maybe I know both, you know, I know both of you, Kate and Serge. Maybe instead of me just having, you know, cweber at octodon.social, maybe I generate different inboxes that I give one to you, Kate, and I give one to you, Serge. And if you two, you know, pass those along and I start getting spammed by one of them, I could just shut it down, right? So it seems kind of principle of least authority-ish in that type of regard. I mean, do you think that that's a good principle of least authority example, Kate? Or do you, or am I off base?
No, I think that's right. I think the ability to, you're basically attenuating your inbox, right? So instead of saying you have the authority to send me as many messages as you want and they go directly to me, you're saying you know, you have the ability to only send messages to this other inbox and I'll handle it differently. So I think that is a really good example of the principle of least authority.
Right. And I could attenuate it in other ways too. I mean, so, you know, yeah, maybe I could restrict it to only 25 messages that you can send me, or maybe I could, you know, I could revoke it eventually. I could say, oh, you can't send me messages anymore. I mean, and I might still want a public inbox, but maybe one thing I could do is I could have a public inbox that anybody could access that's, you know, more well known. But maybe you have to like pay me 5 cents to be able to access that inbox. And then, you know, if I come to know you, then I can hand you this other inbox in which things are handled for free. That, you know, that may be one type of way that we could get around spam or something like that. But what seems cool to me is that, as you said, each one of those options is kind of an attenuation of access to my inbox. So I guess what I'd like to go here, you know, we did this in kind of two different networky type visions of accessing capabilities, but I feel like, you know, maybe a user might be confused. How do we get from this kind of networking type view of things? How do we get that to kind of the language side of things? Because you started talking about the event stream problem. How can we apply these same ideas that we've been understanding to a language in a kind of a module fashion?
Right. So the company that I work for, Agoric, is really focused on this right now, in particular because of the event stream incident. It made it clear that JavaScript packages and the package systems in other languages as well really have no security whatsoever. So if I install a package and maybe it's just doing something very simple, like, you know, adding the exclamation point to the end of my sentences or something like that, like something very silly. Or actually a real example is there's this JavaScript package, Chalk, which just allows you to color your console in different colors. But something that silly has the authority to your entire system. So they can be creating files, they can be sending files, you know, they can do whatever, do pretty much whatever they want. They can send your data out. So what we've been working on is how you would be able to do a safe module system. And the problem is that, let's say you lock everything down, and that's always a good start, is to prevent code from accessing the powerful authorities, like access to your file system and access to your network. But once you lock everything down, then the question is, let's say you have modules or you have pieces of code that actually do need access to, for instance, let's say you're building a Twitter app or something that just shows like Twitter notifications. You actually do want to be able to access the network and get information from Twitter, but you don't need to be able to send out information, right? So you might, and at that point, you might just get an attenuated form of the network access and only be able to hit this one endpoint, which is some kind of read-only twitter.com URL. So that's the kind of thing that we're working on right now for JavaScript, where you can actually give very attenuated authorities to the different modules that you're using. So just because something installs on your computer doesn't mean it has access to everything that you have access to.
Right. So this makes sense to me, because when I think about passing around, you know, we mentioned that capabilities are very reference and kind of possession based. One way that, you know, many of my functions get access to things is that I actually pass in a reference to a variable or something like that to the function, right? And so, you know, my understanding is that in a certain sense, that's kind of what you're suggesting that we do with modules, right? Is that we should be able to pass in access to the network or something like that. We should be able to give modules access to things, but kind of hand them the access instead of them just being able to reach out and grab what they want. Is that right?
Yeah. So the problem with the event stream incident is that it was just able to reach out and grab access to the network and grab access to the file system without actually being granted those authorities. So that would be called ambient authority. And what we're trying to do is to have it be explicit that you're actually handing off access to these authorities and hopefully the attenuated limited form of them. And so that could be in the form of having it's a parameter that you pass into the module when the module is instantiated, or it could be in the form of a manifest, if people are familiar with like the package.json that NPM modules use in JavaScript. So there are different ways that you can actually convey that you're intending to do this, but I think the really important thing is that it's explicit that you're passing these authorities, not that it's implicit and the whatever you're installing is just able to grab them.
Right. So Serge, something you've said to me that you've kind of remarked over and over again is that in many of the there have been many attempts to try to be able to lock things down, but it kind of turns into a configuration nightmare. Isn't that right? Like that's your frustration.
Yeah. When I was working as a sysadmin, and I was partially in charge of my team was in charge of security of these servers, and we had hundreds of servers, and from different teams, and we had looked at systems for mandatory access control, and these systems. So we were looking at SE Linux, and AppArmor is kind of similar in design at least. We tried to implement this, and the idea was, well, what you do is you set out beforehand what each program is going to be able to do, and so you specify like, okay, well, this program can only touch these files, and this program can only touch this thing, or can only access this part of the network, etc. And it's a nightmare to configure because it's fine if the distribution, because we were all running GNU Linux, if the distribution handles it for you, it's not terrible. But anytime you make a modification, we'd have to configure it. But the worst part was that our developers would give us code, and they really wouldn't constrain their programs. So sometimes their programs would start accessing pieces of the file system or doing network things, and they would change what their programs did over time, and they'd need different resources, and we really weren't able to keep up the security requirement of being able to audit their programs and then be able to define specifically what resources they needed. So we eventually we just turned the whole thing off, and then it's like, well, why? What's the point? Because the software that we're most concerned about isn't the version of Apache or Bind that has thousands of people examining it. It's really the internal code. So having a system where that kind of these kind of capabilities are kind of bundled in and have to be handed off to the program would absolutely would have made my job a lot easier.
And Kate, I'd love to hear an explanation for this, because I've heard some people from the agoric type of groups try to, kind of remark on this kind of classic failure of kind of pre-configuring all the security for your programs and then it never quite being enough. And so now either you have like not enough or too much, and that there's this idea that you can do like kind of a just-in-time approach for authority and object capabilities. But what does that mean?
Yeah, I think, in different circumstances, it ends up meaning something very different. Like in some cases, you could even have a software to software negotiation where, the program is saying, hey, you know, I really need access to the file system. And the other program says, well, you know, I don't think so. How about just this directory? And maybe that suffices. But in a lot of cases, that might be really inefficient, right? So I think it depends on what exactly the use case is. And so you see various ways of handling it. But the important thing is that it's not an outside administrator that's setting the policy. It is the software itself that is setting the policy. And one way of kind of handling the problem of having to itemize all of this is a member of the community is building a tool right now that that allows you to kind of print out the authorities that are being used by a JavaScript module. And so there, at least you can check that, hey, now it's not asking for something that's really different than what I think it's doing, which would have solved the event stream incident.
So I'm thinking about what the alternative here is to a system like this. And I'm thinking about what this would look like in the real world. So the alternative that a lot of people are running is that, well, we'll just containerize the application, right? So we'll put it in a Docker container or, you know, whatever the equivalent is. And we'll say, okay, well, you can only access this part of the file system, or you can only talk to, you know, the network through this interface or whatever. And I guess, so help me understand why this is better, but also from a practical standpoint, what's stopping a developer from just saying, okay, well, if I have to list my capabilities are, I want the entire file system and I want the network and I want the screen and everything else.
Yeah, I think XKCD has a really great comic about this called the sandbox cycle, where it's like, all right, so it's okay. So we'll just put everything in containers and that'll work. And then it's like, oh, well, we actually need to interact. And then the next step is, well, all of our interactions are leaving us really vulnerable to all these things. So we should just put everything into containers again. And it's just this ongoing cycle. And so I think what object capabilities allow you to do is to have this really fine-grained form of containers. And it allows you to have safe interactions as well. So it's you're cutting off default access, but you're not cutting off intentional access. And you can design it such that if something malicious happens through that interaction, luckily it won't, destroy your whole file system or destroy your computer or anything like that. It may just, let's say if you're importing the chalk module that changes the colors on your console or your terminal, at the worst, right? The only thing that it would actually do is fail to do that correctly. It wouldn't do all of these other things. So I think you can see it as kind of solving some of the same problems as kind of these very coarse-grained containers, but it can do a lot more than that too.
So this is starting to sound really exciting. Like I can imagine a lot of my computing experience, being able to trust my computer a whole lot more. I can even imagine, could this help with things like my financial, maybe fearing online transactions less or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. So I'm afraid to admit this, but I actually use this this website called mint.com. It takes all of the info from your credit cards and bank accounts and things like that and lets you view it in one website, which sounds great, but the way that it does it is really, really bad and really, really scary. It actually asks you for the password and username to all of these different accounts. So if mint.com is attacked, we really have the worst case scenario where, someone could take all of your money. So we can imagine if instead all that they really need is a read-only capability, right, to all of your accounts. And if they were just able to hand that over rather than, acting as you, taking your password and your username and logging into all of these different credit cards and bank account websites, then that would be a lot safer. And the worst case scenario there would be that, okay, maybe your information gets leaked, but if you really design it well, you could also try to cut off access to the network as well.
Right. That makes sense. So I think there was kind of a funny example of, you know, this running things as you example that I think you and I were talking about, that Alan Karp, who's a member of the object capability community, brought up this example, and I'm probably going to butcher it. But let me see if I can try. I think it was between maybe Alan and Mark Stiegler, who's another object capability person. Anyway, there's two people. We'll just call them Alan and Mark. And the story goes that I think Mark wants to store things in Alan's garage. And you know, Alan says, okay, no problem. Alan hands his key off to his son because he has to leave. And then his son hands it off to Mark. Mark opens the garage and puts his stuff in the garage. And nobody blinks an eye about this scenario. It doesn't seem too stressful. But later, you know, Mark wants to store a file on Alan's computer. So Mark says, could you give me your password to your computer? And then Alan hesitates. And why does Alan hesitate? And I guess that story seems like a reflection on the, oh, you know, maybe this acting as us thing is really, it's not good enough for the kind of computing that we want to be able to do today.
Yeah, I think we just haven't yet designed our computers to be able to have the same kind of fine-grained authority that we see in real life. Like, I think that's a good example. Another example is, you know, when we go to buy something, we don't hand over our wallet to the cashier, right? We hand over the money. So I think, you know, we can design our computers such that they can perform services for us, and we don't have to actually give them control of everything that we have as if they're us. And that's something that I think is really, really important, especially for security and also just for usability.
So let's get down a little bit. I see two directions here. So I guess one is the programming culture, right? Because for a long time, programmers have just assumed that they'll have access to all the things, right? So I just have to import a module, and I can talk to standard in, standard out, and I can talk and pull another thing, and I can pull out the file system and networking. So I guess the first thing is how do we change that? But then I want to hear a little bit about the practical, how do you implement this? You mentioned JavaScript, which means that the Java, I guess the nice thing here, and I'm just guessing, is that means that you're implementing this at the JavaScript engine level, is that, you know, so that the JavaScript engine is then going to be the one that's going to decide whether, you know, it's going to be the one handing the capabilities off to these modules. Is that how that works?
So actually, it's one step higher than that. It's at the language level itself. The object capability enforcement, I guess you could say it's at the V8 level or the engine level, but that is already part of the JavaScript specification. That so there are certain languages where you can't do this very easily, like in C or in languages that aren't memory safe, right? You could make up a number, and then all of a sudden you have access to that pointer or to what that pointer is referencing, right? So I think most of it, if you're a user of object capability paradigm that's already been prepared for you, you don't have to worry about that much. You can just program as usual. But you have the ability to hand over fine-grained authority.
Okay, so that sounds pretty cool. Serge, I'm thinking about how do we, I mean, part of the reason we wanted to bring this up is that we felt like, why we wanted to bring it up now, I should say, is that we felt like this is actually a tie-in to some of the things that we were thinking about in, you know, future episodes, even around the Federation stuff. Where do you think we bring this conversation here for Libre Lounge?
I mean, I think there's a lot to think about here. I guess the first part is, you know, we free software advocates are all about being able to inspect source code and audit programs, and from a legal level, and from a you know, understanding level and an improvement level. But on an everyday basis, we don't go around auditing every program we run. We have a trust relationship with our programs. And so the ability to restrict that trust relationship, or at least change it so that we can more easily give out authority to programs that we don't necessarily know as well, that's a very good thing. It's a good thing for regular people running desktops. It's a good thing for people running on mobile. It's a good thing for servers where there might be lots of private data. And I know that, you know, you and I have talked about things like running arbitrary code. So you gave a talk at CopylefConf about this idea that, well, if you've got a network of thousands of machines, maybe I want to give you some program that I wrote and have it run inside of your machine. And you gave the example of the MUD and Sprightly, and we'll link to that talk. But, you know, the idea that, like, hey, if I've got some, you know, some, let's say, some really cool sword or magic wand or monster that I've designed, and you're like, oh, that's really cool, I could then hand this off to you, and then through the object capabilities, you're going to know and be able to control exactly what it does. And it can't, and, you know, even if it tried to contain malware, it wouldn't be able to do anything bad. Because it literally wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm not able to take arbitrary fire elementals that my friends program and run them in my game, you know, then what kind of a MUD is it going to be? It's going, especially in a distributed world. So I think this stuff is going to be really fun and exciting as we move, you know, even into the more fun and goofier parts of the network space. And of course, obviously, there's a lot more direct examples as we've talked about here. So I feel like that's actually bringing us towards the end of the episode. So I wonder, Kate, would you, you know, we're kind of wrapping things up. Would you like to maybe say a bit more about yourself and your work and things that people should know before we sign off?
Sure. Well, first, thank you so much again for having me. Like I said, I work for a company called Agoric. We actually do secure smart contracts in a subset of JavaScript, but it's all based on object capabilities. So that's something that we're very focused on. So we actually have a whole forum for object capabilities in JavaScript called ocapjs.org. We have a website, agoric.com. There's also, we've written some pieces about like the event stream incident and how POLA, or the principle of least authority, and object capabilities would help with that. There are a whole bunch of kind of background on object capabilities that we can put in the show notes. But really our focus is using object capabilities and a subset of JavaScript to enable people to interact online with cryptocurrencies with objects of value and to not get attacked, which is so far has been mostly impossible. So we're very excited about what we're doing, and especially with object capabilities.
Yeah, I think we're going to want to have both you and other members of the Agoric team in for some future episodes as we explore more along these ideas, and, you know, especially fun things like pet names, which I know you and I have both talked quite a bit about in the past. And all sorts of other fun things. But in the meanwhile, it's been really a pleasure having you on. I'm excited for the future that's unfolding before us in OCAP land.
Yeah, thank you both for helping me understand this a lot better.
Well, thanks again. I had a great time.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right. So I guess, Chris, we'll sign off here and see everyone next time.
Yeah, like a quick reminder, if people enjoyed the episode, we always love feedback. We have a few ways that that people can contact us. One of them being hash Libre Lounge on irc.freenode.net. Some others, I guess, being the, we've got an account on the Fediverse, which is, oh, I'm blanking on it.
It's Libra Lounge at, it's at Libra Lounge at floss.social. We've got pod, you can also email us podcast@libralounge.org. You can find us on Twitter at Libra Lounge.
There we go. And see, that's why this is a conversational or a casual conversation about user freedom, so that when I forget, we can continue the conversation together. All right. This has been great. Take care, everybody.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to Libra Lounge. You can find and subscribe to us at LibraLounge.org. This podcast is released under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 4.0 International License. Our theme music is Bossa Nova by Joth, which is waived into the public domain under CC0 and which you can find on OpenGameArt.org. If you'd like to support Chris Weber's work on this and other user freedom projects, you can donate at patreon.com/CWEBBER. Thanks for listening. See you next time.